Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's show, we're going to be talking about people and the importance of people, the human capital of our organizations, to our success. And I'm honored to have in the studio with me today, Derek Miles, who is the chairman and CEO of the Milestone Brand Incorporated, a professional development and training company that helps corporations and individuals alike achieve a superhuman performance. And I can't wait for Derek to tell us about superhuman performance today. Derek's an author, a speaker, an inventor, and an entrepreneur. So just the perfect guest for the show, because we like to cover all of those topics here. And prior to establishing the Milestone brand, Derek Miles worked for 12 years in hospital leadership, holding numerous executive-level positions in healthcare organizations across the country. He led operations and logistics for facilities with more than 140,000 patients, with serving more than 40,000 children each year. That's phenomenal. He received his MSHA and MBA from the University of Alabama at Birmingham. He is a board-certified healthcare He is board certified in healthcare administration by the American College of Healthcare Executives. And Derek, I just want to thank you so much for being here today. I can't wait to dig into the topic of human capital. And I'm just going to kind of turn it loose and let you just explain to us about human capital and just let us know what all we need to understand about dealing with our people in our organizations.
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you very much for the invite. I'm encouraged to be here. Most of the times when people read my bio, I always like to jump in and say, more than anything, I'm an encourager. Yeah, been an executive, an entrepreneur, inventor, all of that. But I believe the reason that I was put on this earth was to encourage others.
That's your gift.
That's my gift. So you mentioned superhuman performance. So after I worked about 14 years as a healthcare executive in some of the largest healthcare facilities in the country, and here in North Carolina, I was a vice president of operations at WakeMed. I worked in Illinois at the largest healthcare provider, Texas, Florida, and UAB in Birmingham, Alabama. But I tell you what, while working in that industry, I made a whole bunch of money, built our dream home, had, you know, very large cars, but I never got to the point in my life where I was fulfilled. So one of the reasons why I left that industry is because I really wanted to achieve fulfillment in my life. And one day I was walking down the halls of WakeMed, and I heard a small voice said, you know, the people that you're struggling with are not using or do not have command of their gift. And I thought about it when I went back to my corner office. I'm like, gift? I don't even know what that means. So I go home and I open my Bible and I start looking for a spiritual gift. And I was a little bit upset because here I am, 37 years old, and no one explained to me that I had a spiritual gift. And I take some responsibility because I should have been reading. But out of 37 years and being born and raised in the church, someone should have told me that I had a unique gift inside of me.
Well, I think that's something that isn't highlighted in our culture today in our churches.
Yeah, so I personally got upset when I realized that God had gave me a unique gift to be successful in the assignment that he gave me. So he knows who we are, that we don't have a lot of confidence in ourselves, but that's okay.
He gave us a gift. Because we're supposed to have confidence in him.
Amen. That's right. So he had to give us a gift. So what he gave us to accomplish that we would be successful, we wouldn't be able to do it without him. And the dream and the assignment is so big, you can't do it in your own strength. So he had to give you a gift. So I started thinking about it. I said, I called my identical twin brother down in Orlando, Florida. I said, Daryl, I think I want to write a book on gifts and how you can use those gifts in the marketplace. So my brother and I started a radio show similar to yours, and we started inviting executives, entrepreneurs, celebrities, and faith-based leaders onto the show to talk about how they were utilizing their gift in the marketplace. So we were amazed on the number of people who participated in that book. I mean, like George Foreman of the George Foreman Grill.
Right.
Pat Williams, a senior vice president of the Orlando Magic, Peter Daniels, a billionaire in Australia, just people from all over the world just came together and said, you know what, I have a unique gift, and you can use that gift in the marketplace. Gifts like leadership and wisdom and teaching and administration, all those different type of gifts that corporations need to utilize to get the most out of their employees. So you
encouraging.
Can have, encouraging. So you can have normal performance based on your talent, but superhuman performance comes when you utilize the gift that God's put inside of you. So we're very excited. That book gave us an opportunity to speak in corporations all across the country. Mm-hmm. I was so encouraged that people would come up to me afterwards and say, you know what? I know what you're talking about. I know you did a good job of masking it, but you're talking about my spiritual gift, aren't you? I said, I'm exactly talking about the spiritual gift that you have inside of yourself. And as a result of that book, Milestone really blossomed because people will come up to me and says, Derek, I want to be able to do what you did. How did you, you know, work in corporate America, get to the point where you have a corner office and you just leave and go and do what you're encouraged about, what your dream is.
Right.
And then different type of executive says, Derek, I want to write a book. Can you help me? And I was like, yeah, I can help you. One of the blessings that we received during our process of writing the book was our book got accepted by three major publishers.
And, outstanding.
Turned them all down because I never, you know, being someone who didn't know the process, when they told me when my book was going to come out in 16 to 18 months,
yes. 24 months.
And, yeah. I heard that. And I'm like, no way. I said, I have this burning inside of me. I want to get this book out as soon as possible. But the last publisher, they did put us in contact with a number of people who worked on their major books. And we just took those relationships and we started Milestone Publishing House on our own.
Okay.
And now we represent the largest Christian CEO group in the world, about 12,000 CEOs. We have a number of CEOs from CEO Forum.
Okay.
And CEO Forum is 175 of the Fortune 500, our believers. And we have two of those guys, and we're growing, and we're writing books for senior level leaders. So that's how our publishing company got started, which has about 22 books in it now.
Okay.
Believe it or not, in 4 years, we've done 22 books. And I believe our overall goal is to travel the country with the people that we represent, speakers, musicians, comedians, performers, to encourage families.
Mm-hmm.
Because I tell you, in my corporate career, if there was one area where I was failing at home. I wasn't the greatest father, the greatest husband, the greatest community citizen, and the message that we want to get out to people, it doesn't matter what you do in corporate America. If you're not succeeding at home, you're a failure.
Yes. Well, and it's we get so caught up in our corporate, that climbing that corporate ladder and thinking those are the things that are going to make us happy.
No fulfillment in your corporate career. I was telling my identical twin brother just yesterday. He says, you know, I haven't built my big house yet. And I was like, Daryl, please don't get caught up in a big house. There's no fulfillment in it.
Right.
I mean, you're going to find something else that you see. One of your friends is going to have something that you don't have. And all of a sudden, you're working hard to go out and get a bunch of stuff that brings no fulfillment. I read a book many years ago. It was called What Got You Here Won't Get You There by Marshall Goldsmith. And I had an opportunity to work with him up at Soundview. So a person whose book changed my life, I had an opportunity to work with. So that's nobody but God to just take me from nowhere as a platform to be with someone who sold millions of books. But at the end of his book, he talks about if you put yourself in the mindset and you're in your deathbed and you think about to the last job you had 5 years ago, who would be there at your deathbed? And I start thinking about it. I'm like, no one. No one from the last job I had 5 years ago would come to see me in the hospital on my deathbed. And his next question was, who would be there? And the answer was your family.
Right.
So when you break it all down, that's who are the people that we really need to spend the time with. But far too often, they get the short end of the stick. Because we're out trying to make money, and even in the African-American community, we're taught that we're supposed to be providers.
Right.
So I'll tell you this story. Our oldest son is 12 years old, and when we moved here from Chicago, I typically leave about 3 months before them. That's how when you get recruited, you're gone, your family's behind, you got to sell the house. And I brought my son down for a weekend, and I took him to Five Guys. We don't have Five Guys in Chicago, but I took him to Five Guys. We're sitting there talking and having a conversation, and I said, "Devin, do you remember our home in Texas?" He's like, "No, Dad, I don't remember our home in Texas." I said, "You got to remember the home in Texas. It was big. Everything's bigger in Texas." He said, "We had the movie theater in it." He says, "Dad, I don't remember anything about Texas." He says, "The only thing I remember about Texas is when you took me to Six Flags."
The time you spend is more important than the things you spend your time on.
Amen. I mean, that started opening my eyes, because here I am working these 50, 60-hour weeks to provide things for him. He remembered none of the things, just the time that he spent with his dad. So I was telling my brother again yesterday, I used to have this $100,000 car, and one of the guys I was mentoring, like, "Man, I can't wait to get a car like this." I said, "Please don't get a car like this." I said, "There's no fulfillment in it." And I can see his eyes turn. Well, he was basically saying to me, "I want to experience it for myself." I'm saying, "Man, this is like chasing the wind." I traded that car in a couple years ago, almost 3 years ago. So all of the big houses and big cars are gone for fulfillment of going around the country and serving others.
And making a difference.
Yes. Yes.
So talk about how we make a difference in our organizations by how we lead them and how we interact with our people, that human capital that's going to make the difference.
Yes.
For us.
You know, most people don't really understand human capital today. And when I say understanding human capital, first thing you have to understand is the behaviors of your people. So many years ago, I would say probably 20 years ago, a leader would be in a position and they had the most knowledge. Mm-hmm. Right. But corporate America's changed. And the span of controls got so much larger that a leader cannot have all the myopic details in a particular job. So they have to hire people who have more knowledge than them. So they're called knowledge workers. And when you have knowledge workers, that means individuals know more about a particular department, what do you want to call it, than you do, but it reports
up
to you.
Or functional area. So somebody knows more about taxes or accounting or marketing.
So I'm going to tell you about the mistake that I made because I didn't know my people. So the first thing with human capital, you have to know your people and you have to manage them based on their behavior, not on your own behavior.
Right.
So because it was up to me, I would manage people based on my behavior, and I'd be one particular way. So let me tell you about a failure that I had. So I had a gentleman that was reporting to me at one of the jobs, and his department never showed any improvement. So I would have conversations with him. I said, basically on a monthly basis, we need to start showing improvement in this department. And one day I was meeting with him. He said to me, he says, "Derek, I want to let you know, since you got here, I've never been so frightened for my job." And I started looking around. I'm like, where's that coming from? But I'm a natural aggressive guy, naturally. Mm-hmm. And my natural aggression was 180 degrees from what he was. He was more laid back. So my natural aggression was putting him at a point where he was feeling that I was trying to really beat him up. Mm-hmm. Well, I was just really saying we just have to show continued improvement. So if I would have knew his natural behavioral style before just giving him my style, we could have gotten more performance out of him. So what will happen many times in organizations is we manage people based on what our behavior is and not on their behavior.
Right, what we're comfortable with.
Absolutely. And you just get caught in a rut and it is looked at as a weakness. But there's tools out there today that people can utilize to find out what people's natural behaviors are. And one of the tools that I used to use with a client is called the AVA, Activity Vector Analysis. And with the activity vector analysis, it gives you an opportunity to liberate your human capital. So I'll tell you another story. Typically, when I would apply for a position, they'll give some pre-employment exam, test or whatever. I never do well on that. I don't know. But you can't throw people away because they take an exam and they don't do well. So within the AVA, what I like about it, it's positives and negatives, and it gives you an opportunity to hire someone where someone is weak, and that's a good thing, just like the gifts. We're not all given the gifts, but when we all come together, there becomes superhuman
performance.
Everything's
there, right. Yeah. Everything's there when everybody comes together and works together.
Absolutely. So
if you hire properly.
Correct. Man, I'll tell you this story. I was at Wendy's on Friday picking my wife. My wife is a traveling consultant. And there was a guy in there. He had the greatest customer service skills. And I was telling my wife, you know what? I can't wait until we sell this grill because I'm going to hire that guy to work on our team because he just has the best customer service skills I've ever seen in my life. But So I'm always on the lookout, looking for the type of people, wherever I am,
right,
to add to my organization, because I want it to be the absolute best that it can be. So leaders out there, if you want your organization to be the absolute best, there's two things you need to know. One, you need to get to know your people and their natural behavioral style. And two, if you don't know your people, you need to learn how to liberate them. And the best way to liberate your people is to give them an assessment called the AVA.
Well, I know from my experience managing people and being managed, you can discourage people by not letting them use their strengths and putting them in positions. And I'm working on a book now that I call The New Peter Principle. Mm-hmm. In corporate America, people get promoted to the level of their own incompetence as the old Peter Principle. And we don't always come together with our gifts to support them. Mm-hmm. When they may not have been the most technical savvy person or the best management skill person, but for some reason, our organization's promoted that person. Mm-hmm. And our job is to make them better.
Right.
And we forget that in how we interact. We forget that everybody's not going to be as skilled as a communicator. Or I don't remember how many times I got sent to communication classes when I was in corporate America to fix my communication style. And I'd get in the class, and I'd end up helping the professors teach the classes. And they're like, why are you here? Mm-hmm. I said, because they're not liking the content of my message. Right? So they weren't getting that, you know, I was giving them the information they needed, and my boss didn't always want to hear. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, it was to some extent, it's like you were saying, it's a style thing. I'm direct. I don't have a hidden agenda. I was calling it like I saw it. And that's not corporate America in most organizations. And so that made people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And realizing that they're uncomfortable with that communication style, or softening it a little bit, or people forgetting that you had a life and experiences and work history before you came in, and all they see is what they put you in that cubicle to do today, and they forget your history. And they don't respect that. And that's something I think corporate America and small organizations, too, have to work on.
Well, did you know that almost 75% of all workers today are in two different categories, one being not engaged, or two, actively disengaged at work? So a person,
they quit, but they didn't leave the building.
That's right. They quit the organization. They're quitters, but they're still there. I'm going to tell you a quick story I heard a couple days ago between a CEO and a CFO. So the CEO, he was a big proponent of professional development. Mm-hmm. So he says to the CFO, he says, we need to spend money in professional development. And he says, well, what if they leave the organization? We spend all this money and they leave. He says, well, that's a concern, but what if they stay? We don't spend any money, they stay in the organization. And I'm that CEO that I believe that you have to give people an opportunity to personally improve, because if they don't personally improve, they become stagnant. It almost becomes like the Dead Sea.
Right.
I remember working in corporate America when the downturn in the economy, or any time there's any type of waves that are rolling, you're not making as much money, the first thing that's cut is training and development. And that's the worst thing to do, because now your people don't have an opportunity to grow. So they're going to work at the same pace, at the same productivity level, because they haven't had an opportunity to learn anything else new. So one of the things that I think is really important as I go back to the AVA is, me today, I'm naturally not a detail person. Mm-hmm. But when I came out of graduate school, I was very detailed because I was working for the CEOs and they were making decisions based on that. But as I got promoted very quickly, you have multiple departments under your purview. You don't have time to manage the minutiae anymore. And I got so, after 14, 15 years working at executive level, I'm accustomed to working at a 30,000 foot level. So if you want me to be detailed, I'm not your guy. But if you want someone to give vision and drive the organization, that's who I am today. But you can't throw me away just because I don't have detail. You have to bring someone on the team who's detailed to make our team better. And typically what I see is, over time, is some leaders, once they find out their weakness, they tend to throw people away and put them on the sideline and try to bring someone else in that they think could have all the skills, and it'll never happen.
Right. Or they try to spend so much time fixing that weakness that they neglect to use the strengths the people already have.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, people saw the flip side of that study by the Gallup poll back in 2002, the 75% being disengaged or actively disengaged. The people who were engaged at work had an opportunity to do what they did well every day. So one of the things that we wrote in Superhuman Performance as one of the recommendations is you have to find out what some person's gift is and make sure they have an opportunity to do that every day. If they don't have an opportunity to do what they love to do every day, they're going to burn out, not be very productive.
Well, I know you were talking about details. I'm detail-oriented when I'm building something or okay. I'm creating something. But if I have to do the same detail work day in, day out, and I said if I'm doing debits and credits and entering journal entries, I am so out of there. so it's playing to those strengths because we do each, and I like taking the different tests. In MBA, we took Myers-Briggs. We took all kinds of different ones. And I took StrengthFinders recently for my seminary program. And it was fun looking at that and then having the discussion with peers in class as to what does that mean? Have you had jobs? Or are you using it in your ministry or in your business or whatever role you're in? Are you using those strengths? Are you recognizing those strengths and then putting the teams around you?
Right.
So that when you put a team together, you don't get everybody that's purely strategic and vision and you go get someone that's good at the details or someone that's good at relationships and just those different things and bringing that together to maximize how your team comes together. Because there's nobody that's going to do everything well.
Right. I mean, I personally, I'm not a big fan of StrengthFinders.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of Myers-Briggs, and I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
Because when you take those different type of assessments, it's solely about you.
Right.
But the gifts are about serving others. So the reason that we have a gift, my gifts are not for Derek Miles.
No, they're for the world.
They're for the world. So that's why I like the gift piece is because someone finds out, they said Derek Miles has the gift of encouragement, leadership, and administration. They immediately thought, because people think about themselves more than they think about you. So when they think, when they hear the gift that that person has, they're going to run to that person because of that gift. Whereas Myers-Briggs and StrengthFinders solely about you. And
There's a lot of trying to find, what I find working with clients and peers is that a lot of people don't know themselves. They've spent so many years in the corporate world conforming and being that person that the world told them that until they take a Myers-Briggs or a StrengthFinders, they don't know who they are. They've been busy pretending to be somebody else to get ahead, to climb that ladder.
Wearing a mask.
Right. And to, I remember when I lived in St. Paul, Minnesota, back in the 80s, and going through one of the office buildings at night about 5 o'clock when everybody was coming off the escalators. And it looked like they had a cloning machine upstairs because everybody had the same suit, the same tie, the same shirt collar. And I remember one of the security guards came over, he goes, you stop every evening and watch. Who are you and what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to figure out what floor the clone machine is on because everybody was so lockstep in those corporate environments that they didn't want to wear a different color tie.
Yeah, they didn't want
to be, you didn't want to appear to be different. And I think we get away from recognizing our spiritual gifts, our strengths, our normal programming, our wiring, and schools do it. They want you to fit that mold.
They do.
You know, training programs do it. And you go in there, and if somebody wants to stand out, it's within the parameters of acceptably standing out. And I think a lot of people need to spend time digging in and finding out who they are, accept those strengths. If you're an administrator, if you're a visionary, if you're good at execution, if you're really bad at relationships, you need to know those types of things. And then come back and say, okay, this is who God made me.
Yeah.
If that's your belief system, which it is mine. And that's how I'm wired. And that means somewhere out there is somebody I need to bring into my organization or on my team that has strengths that I don't have. That I can help them, that they can lift me up, and I can lift them up. And together, we're stronger and we're better at doing that. I remember being at Ford and sharing a cubicle with this gentleman, and he was Mr. Detail. And I was, you know, I could look at it and say, 10 years from now, this is where Ford Motor Company is going to be. And he's like, okay, but I can find all the detail that goes to get us there. And if I had to do what he did, or if he had to do what I did, it wouldn't work. And people could were always amazed that we got along so well being so different.
Right.
But Mike was good at what he did, and I was good at what I did, and together, that was a complete set. And,
that's right.
And we could come forward and say, okay, we've done the analysis, and here's, you know, 30,000 spreadsheets of the detail. And then here's what we've concluded from that, and this is where it would be. And people would say, well, how would you know that in 10 years this is where we would be. I was like, it was obvious to me. As we were talking before the show, you can see things.
Right.
Different people have different gifts, and you can and you can see different things. And being able to vocalize that, but not always being able to give them the detail to see why it's gone there, is a challenge in corporate America and in those roles. And in our small businesses, that we're never alone, and our success is always about the team we're on, the people we're with, and how we take our skill sets out to make everything better.
I remember you're talking about how you and that other guy were a good set. I remember I did a webinar for Soundview, and Soundview is for busy executives, about 500,000 people across the world subscribe to Soundview. And when I finished doing my superhuman performance webinar, a person called in and said, "Derek, we have a salesman on our team. Wonderful gift in sales, but he's beaten our entire team up. What do I do? Do I hire a superstar, or do I hire team players?" And I said, "Well, that's easy." I said, "You hire the team players, because if you have a superstar and they're beating your team up, and you can't move forward because there's one particular person who feels that they're the star, is bringing the rest of the team down, he has to go because he's not being a really good team player." So one of the things I called, we wrote a pamphlet for superhuman performance for faith-based audiences. We call that person that they are, I can't believe this. That person is projecting. There we go. That person is projecting their gift. So for me, I have a natural gift of administration as well. So if someone's not as good as me in administration, before, I would say 2008, 2009, I would get upset because I couldn't understand why is it taking them so long, right? But it was a natural gift for me, and now I understand I'm not projecting my gift on anybody else. That's just something that I do well, and the things that I don't do well, somebody else can bring along. So you have to be mindful of projecting your gift.
Yeah, and it's having realistic expectations and recognizing other people's gifts. I have a dear friend who's does a show here on Courage Cocktail on Wednesdays at noon, Leanne McClymont, and her gift is relationship building. And she can make a connection, you know, with her voice, with her talents, meeting people in a room that is just lights up the room. And that is not something I can meet anybody. I've never met a stranger. But it's not the same connecting she does relationship-wise that I do. And so I'm always telling her, she gets me into my relationship mode when we're working together, and I get into the execution and administration mode. And that's a great complementary set, because we do have different skill sets, and we can value that for each other and bring that to the table to help each other when we're working together on projects. And so it's great to recognize that, but it does build frustration when someone wants the gift of execution and they didn't get it, right? Or someone wants to do something faster, or you sit there and, and you may be faster at something, and you can see it in the corporate America where, well, why can't he get that? Well, that's not...
not his gift.
That's not his gift. That's not. And putting people in management roles
Who don't have the gift of leadership happens all the time. You were talking about the Peter Principle. So in healthcare, what typically happens is you have this really good nurse who's really has a really good bedside manner. And just because she or he is really good at nursing, they get promoted to leadership. And it becomes a burning platform. That's that one additional level above where they should be. And I see it happen. I used to see it happen all the time.
Well, when we come back from this break, we'll talk about making sure we match up and we have dual tracks in our businesses to promote people in their strengths. And so we're going to come back after this. And here are our PSAs and our thank yous to our supporters. Focus on Business and WCOM FM are proud to support the Ronald McDonald House of Durham. To learn more about the Ronald McDonald House of Durham, visit their website at www.ronaldhousedurham.org. That's www.ronaldhousedurham.org, or give them a call at 919-281-1065. We'd like to thank our Golden Voice underwriters, The Forest Firm, providing sound legal counsel to new, existing, and growing businesses. Get to know The Forest Firm at their website, www.forestfirm.com. That's www.forestfirm.com. And get to know Focus Resources, your strategic, operational, and financial business consultant. Visit their website at www.focusresourcesinc.com. That's www.focusresourcesinc.com. We'd also like to thank Harrington Bank, your community bank. Get to know your neighbor at www.bankatharrington.com. That's www.bankatharrington.com. And finally, we'd like to thank IWP Photography, capturing the important moments of your professional, business, and personal life. With event photography and live event painting, get to know them at their website, www.iwpphotography.com. That's www.iwpphotography.com. Thanks to all of our underwriters. WCOM-FM and Focus on Business are proud to support Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina, serving the Triangle. Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina is your community Make-A-Wish. To learn more about what Make-A-Wish is doing, visit their website at www.eastnc.wish.org. That's www.eastnc.wish.org, or give them a call at 1-800-432-WISH. That's 1-800-432-9474. Well, before the break, we were talking about people getting promoted out of their expertise level, that you may have a really great technical person and they get promoted into management, and that's not where their gift or their role is. So one of the things I like to encourage my clients to do is think about having promotional paths that encourage the technical people to continue to improve and rise and get recognition and take leadership roles, but also have that path of really good managers to manage those technical people. So let's talk about that a little bit, Derek.
You know, my good friend Willie Stewart has done a wonderful job with that. Willie has a company called Stewart Engineering, one of the top 15 engineering firms in the state of North Carolina.
Willie will be here on February 18th.
Is that right? Well, one of the things that Willie has done, he used to have the same problem that I would have in hospitals he would have in engineering. He said, I would promote this engineer, great engineer, into a leadership role, and again, burning platform. And he said the worst thing he had to do is actually demote them back to an engineering role. So he had the bright idea. He says, but if I demote them back to an engineering role, you stifle their salary. So he created dual tracks for straight engineers and then straight for managers. So now the engineers who are really good engineers and don't have the gift of leadership can continue to increase their salary on the left side, and then the people in management on the right side can also continue to make more money. But let's be honest. The reason that most people want to go into management is to make more money. And unfortunately, there's, I would say, more than half of the people who are in leadership positions today do not possess the gift of leadership.
Well, there are managers and there are leaders, there are administrators and there are detailed people. Mm-hmm. And those are not necessarily the same people you want leading your organization. Leaders, you want there.
Right.
Managers, you need in certain roles. I like to say in corporations and businesses, organizations, we have different types of people. We have mountain men that go out and blaze the trails. They're the visionaries. They're going to take us out there. And we have the guys that come along, and they're the hunters and the trappers, but they still don't want to be settling in.
Right.
then along comes the biggest part of our population, our pioneers. They come in.
Yes.
They're going to come in, and then they're going to start settling, and they'll leave some people here, and they'll want to do the same thing every day. They'll put in that really good wagon, and they'll put in the well and the pump. And then you'll have people that will just come along then that they want all that infrastructure already there, and they want you to tell them what to do, the same thing over and over again. And we need all of those in our organizations.
But how do you split them, though? Because one of the, I'll tell you, when I became an entrepreneur, after spending 14, 15 years as an executive leader, and then having to make the quick switch to an entrepreneur, and you're working with non-leaders,
right,
frustrated the heck out of me. I didn't know what to do because I would have to sit there in detail and keep prodding to get things done. When I was in corporate America, you say, okay, I need this done by Thursday, and it gets done.
Yeah, but there's 30,000 other little minions running around doing that, right? So I remember what some of my CEOs I work with, the hardest thing for me to get them to understand it when they come out to be an entrepreneur, and they were used to being a CEO of a company that had a legal department and had finance and accounting. And by the time they got a legal agreement in front of them, they could sign it. It had already been vetted by all the technical people. Now, as the entrepreneur of a company, when the technical agreement comes to you, don't sign it. Call your lawyer. Call your accountant. Call your consultant. And realize that it's a different role you're stepping into, and it's different skill sets. And it does not always equate to somebody that was an outstanding CEO in a Fortune 500 company that came into an established company and didn't grow it into a Fortune 500 company, that they can run an entrepreneurial company.
Can I make a recommendation?
Yes.
If you're an executive and you're moving into an entrepreneurial role, please hire a business coach. And the reason I say that is that I wasn't arrogant enough to think just because I moved swiftly in corporate America that I was going to become this overnight success as an entrepreneur. I knew nothing. And I just heard this small voice gave me a name of a person. And I found them on Facebook, sent them a note, and we started a coaching relationship. Spent a couple $1,000s, but I was having a conversation with my identical twin brother one day, and he says, Derek, who are you spending time with? I says, well, I have this executive coach on entrepreneurship that I hired out of D.C. He says, I'm going to hire him. I say, like, why? He says, man, because you are learning so much.
Right, because we don't know, and that's why we tell the listeners all the time, we don't know what we don't know.
Right.
When I started my company almost 12 years ago, I at least knew there was a lot of stuff I didn't know.
Right.
And I knew how to look for that. And then I looked, my first book came out of that, my Out of the Cubicle and Into Business, because when I went out and looked, you could see a business plan book, or you could see this book on accounting, or you could, you know, your overnight MBA or whatever. But nothing there combined the personal aspect of it, the professional aspect, and the, oh, dear Lord, what have I done aspect of being the person on the hot seat and being responsible for everything. You can't have your legal department handle it because there is no legal department. You're out making the sales. You're marketing. You're wearing all of those hats.
All of them.
And some of them fit better than others.
Absolutely.
And depending on your personality type, it's whether you're going to be willing to go out and say, I don't know. I need some help. And like you said, picking up the phone or reaching out through LinkedIn or whatever to reach out to a person to say, you know, I need some experience from an seasoned entrepreneur and stuff. And I remember writing my book, and one of my uncles had been in real estate and had his own real estate company as I was growing up. And so I started sending him chapters, and he would come back and he'd give me a quote or something. He'd say, I wish somebody had written this, had this book written when I started out 40 years ago. And I would give it to somebody that was running an incubator, and they're like, he said, you know, I fell asleep reading this last night. And I said, I could take that one of two ways. He goes, no, I couldn't put it down. And I needed to understand that while I ran an incubator in a larger organization, I'm out running my own gig now, and I didn't know what I didn't know. I still thought helping other people start their businesses gave me enough knowledge. And so we have to be able to say, I'm not good at, I need help with this. I can't build a website overnight. I'm not good at that. And maybe you're not a good writer. And so you get bringing somebody into writing skills. And on the other hand, I love to write, and it's easy for me to sit down and generate an article in 20 minutes. But I love my editor. She is like one of the most important assets in my life because I do what I call brain dumps. And I don't worry if I got the punctuation right or that kind of thing. She comes back and she smooths those rough edges.
Is she local?
Yes, she is. She's great. I'll give you her name.
Okay.
But she's fabulous to lean on there and know that I can do focus on the content and producing content to get articles out there, to get books out there, and not worry about did I lay out the page right or did I put a semicolon, mm-hmm, whatever. Mm-hmm. Usually, I'm getting pretty good. She doesn't have as many as many corrections to make as she used to. But there's also different writing styles, whether I'm writing a paper for class, mm-hmm, or I'm writing an article for Main Street.
Right.
Or I'm writing for M World. Whoever I'm writing for has a different length, a different style, a different voice they want us to use. And being able to switch that and rely on other people to help us come up with that.
That's the key.
Phenomenal.
I mean, what I'm hearing is what we did within Milestone, because I said before, even in corporate America, you have people who are making six figures who are not very engaged. So within Milestone,
they're phoning it in.
Yeah. So within Milestone, what we did, we only developed relationships based on a person's gift. And if they were working 100% of the time in their gift, well, we wanted to work with that person. We didn't want to work with people who were doing it on the side. They had a full-time job, but doing it on the side. We didn't 1099 them.
Right.
But if they were in their gift 24/7, those are the people that we established relationships with. And now it, I would say, it's fared pretty well for us in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and writing is one of my gifts, and I knew that back in undergrad, because mm-hmm, I was one of those people that when I was doing a research paper, that was fun, right?
No way.
So
really?
I loved writing. I could just sit down, someone tell me to creatively, you know, answer something, and I loved public speaking and doing those kind of things. So the things that would normally scare people,
mm-hmm,
were the things that I was drawn to.
Can I jump in there too?
Sure.
So I know people always talk about public speaking being the most fearsome activity, even up higher than death. But when I was in corporate America, I think the reason why I would get nervous is because I didn't have any passion about the topic.
Mm-hmm.
Once I left corporate America and I started talking about, you know, superhuman performance and human capital, I can get up and speak for hours.
It's your content.
Yes.
You own it. It's,
that's
it's,
right.
It's not somebody
it's
else's
natural
message.
Yeah.
It's, it, and when you're
there
sharing
you
that, that's
mm-hmm,
when you have your own message, when you have your own platform. And in your business, it's mm-hmm, the same way. If you're passionate about what you're in business to do,
yep,
that message comes out. That authenticity comes
mm-hmm
out. And you just have so much more fun showing up. And, okay, your accounting and invoicing your clients may never be fun for you. The little administrative tasks may never make you excited. But knowing that that's a milestone
mm-hmm
for what you've achieved, to be able to send a bill out to your client means there's someone buying your stuff, right?
Right.
And so that excitement, that passion you can bring to it. And I go around and 9 times out of 10 when I speak, I don't have a prepared speech.
You don't need one.
I don't need it. I know my topic.
Yeah.
Whether it's government grants and contracts and compliance or teaching auditors or whatever that subject is,
mm-hmm,
I'm showing up as a subject matter expert.
Right.
I'm passionate about it. I spend time in it because that's what I love to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you had told me to go out and speak about dismantling a transmission,
mm-hmm,
I'm going to show up with, you know, 30,000 pages of notes. That's
right.
Not what I do.
Right.
And I think that's what people need to realize, that when they're out marketing their businesses,
mm-hmm,
when they're finding their voice, they have to find out their strengths.
Right.
Play to those strengths. Don't ever brand against your
mm-hmm
your personality.
Mm-hmm.
If you're bold, have a bold brand.
Right.
If you're introverted,
mm-hmm,
play off that introversion and do that kind of thing. And it's just building that and making that realistic and embracing it. You know, our gifts are there for a reason.
Yeah. So we also have a speakers bureau. So people that we represent, most people who write a book have something to say. So we have a speakers bureau to augment the resources they bring in from the book. And I remember just last week I had to look for 5 speakers and people mm-hmm saying, Derek, you know, what topic should I speak on? And I'm like, well, that's easy. The topic you're most passionate about. If it's not your most passionate topic, I'm not even going to put your name in the hat as a potential speaker.
Right.
Because I know, just like you said before, if you're passionate about a topic, you're going to give 100%. Your audience is going to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to make an impact. But if you're just saying, oh, it's on leadership, well, let me put together a leadership speech, that's okay.
Well, and it's kind of funny. I have to pick on I won't name the politician here locally, but I remember running into this politician numerous times at entrepreneurial events. And a gentleman was here from Boston, and I ran into him at several events, and we were sitting at the same table again, and he moaned, the sad moan when he saw the politician get up. And then I looked, and I thought, please tell me he's not unfolding the same 8.5 by 11 notebook paper that he's been using forever. The guy leans over to me, and he looks at me. He says, I've seen that guy speak 5 times off of that same piece of paper in the past 2 weeks. I can give his speech. I said, yeah, I bet you can, and probably be more passionate about it. Because if you're at that point, you're giving the same talk, and it's off of a piece of paper that is so folded that you've used it over and over again, you're not passionate about that message.
Mm-hmm.
You're phoning it in. You're showing up because you need to be there in front of your constituents or whatever. And that's a sad thing. People can measure your passion for your topic.
No doubt about it. I was talking to Pat Williams years ago, senior vice president of the Orlando Magic, and he said, Derek, you know, you can fool people for about 2 weeks, and then after that, the gig is up. People can tell immediately. So I'll tell a story about a friend of mine who was working on a job, and they had some consultants come in, and they said that, you know, that person over there is really not passionate. And they come to me and said, I can't believe they could tell I wasn't passionate. I said, are you kidding me? People can pick up on passion any day. So that's why it's so important as a speaker and an author to write, speak on that topic that you're most passionate about, to hire people in your organization mm-hmm. that have passion. If you want a return on your investment, what you're paying that person, make sure they're passionate about coming in
and
work for you.
Right, and I'd rather have a person that's less experienced and more passionate about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know they're going to go that extra effort.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to constantly, encouraging is one thing.
Right.
If you always have to energize them, if you always have to get them started, that's not good for anybody in your organization. It's just like, okay, come in prepared, hit the chair, and, you know, if they're doing FaceTime, they're there 12 hours a day, but it's just their face is there, the rest of them isn't.
Right.
That's another problem. That's discouraging to the other people who would be passionate about your business and about what's going on around you. And it's when I'm out speaking occasionally, I will run into a younger person. Typically, they're either still in college or just mm-hmm. starting their career. And they said, well, I wish someone would make me participate. And I'm like, put your big girl shoes on, because you're an adult now and nobody makes you participate in life.
No,
you make a decision about whether you're passionate about your job, whether you show up about it, whether you're going to put your effort into learning more, doing more, having something come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to show up to make you participate.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I want to talk about, how you can help people show up mm-hmm. is based on your culture in your organization. So for me, I moved through corporate America very quickly is because I had a sponsor instead of a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to create a sponsorship culture. And the way
make
that
the
mine works.
Make the difference for
sure.
our listeners.
So a mentor is a person who may not even work at the same organization. You can bounce ideas off of them. You're going to give a presentation. You might want to give it to them in advance, let them give you some feedback. But a sponsor is an individual who actually works in the organization that you work for at a higher level. And when you're not in the room and assignments are being divvied out, they mention your name. So I remember working in Jacksonville, Florida, and we had this consulting firm come in because the organization wasn't doing that well.
Mm-hmm.
And because we were in a smaller city, this big-time consulting firm did not have a hub in that city.
Right.
So the consultants would come in on Sunday, leave on Thursday. But hospitals are 24/7.
Yes.
So as a result, they needed someone to have boots on the ground. And they said to our board, they said, we need to have a person here to manage this project when our consultants are not home, because they got to not on campus, because they got to go home and meet with their families. And while I was not in the room, one of the executives says, give that project to Derek Miles.
Right.
And what happened for me is I got 36 departmental turnaround plans just put on my desk on a Monday morning. So I basically became an industry expert on how to turn an organization around.
Right.
I had the plans right in front of me.
Right.
Because there was a sponsor. So within your organization, especially if you have people who have potential, make sure you're sponsoring them instead of just mentoring them.
And I had, Ford had what they officially called a mentoring program.
Did they?
And so the rule was that, and it was more, as you're describing, a sponsoring program.
Okay.
The rule was it wasn't supposed to be in your chain of command. Well, guess what? Mine was not only in my chain of command, he was the second highest ranking person in my chain of command, and my backup mentor was his boss.
Man.
And so I would wait till the very last moment when something was just going, and I'd be calling the admin saying, can I see Jim? Well, he's got about 45 minutes. He's got it 15 minutes, but you'll never make it. I was like, oh, I'll make it there. And I'd be driving down. He'd be like, you know what? And I would lay it out. And he goes, well, you're right. I said, okay, but what am I supposed to do about it? He goes, well, you can't do anything about it. I have to do something about it because you're right. And I'm like, oh, well, that 45-minute drive back is going to be – and you would drive back, right? And then there's all your chain of command management between my position and his. Like, what did you – I said, I went to my mentor, right? And I was blessed that every time I went to him, I was right. But that was not the best way to have it set up. But I had other unofficial sponsors. And they would, every time something would come up, it'd be like, well, you know, give it to Lee. Lee will do it, whether it was learning a new software program or doing something. And because I could learn things quickly. I'm good at learning things quickly. Mm. And we would turn it around. But it makes a huge difference in your career, in your perception of assignments, in how those are presented, and the opportunities you get as to who's in your corner, especially the larger the organization.
Yeah, because the playing field today for human capital is not fair. It's uneven. So when you look at a lot of the data today, the best and brightest Harvard, Stanford MBAs are all going in private equity. I mean, I read in the Wall Street Journal recently that a Stanford grad made north of $500,000 just coming out of graduate school, right? Well, one thing that private equity firms and venture capital investment firms have not done well is work-life balance.
Yes.
So after those individuals worked in those environments for like 4 or 5 years, once you give
them turn and burn.
Yes, yes. You give them an opportunity to have work-life balance. And one of the organizations here locally that has done a great job of work-life balance is Bandwidth.com, Henry Kastner. And I'm going to give you that recommendation.
Running, yes.
Yeah. So within Bandwidth.com, every Wednesday night is date night. They require the people to go on a date with their family or their, you know, their significant other. Every day during lunchtime, they get an hour and a half for lunch to work out.
Right.
And they lock the doors at 6 p.m. because they want to make sure that all of their employees have an opportunity to get home and have dinner with their families.
Now, I've worked some places where they locked the doors at 6 p.m., but we were still inside.
No.
So no. So it's, it's, and you make those choices.
Yeah.
Organizations lose people over not treating them as individuals.
Did you know, I also read in a journal, that there was an employee at Bank of America in the investment banking division that passed away a few weeks ago, and they attributed it to the hours. Now, there's a reason, I was telling a guy the other day, there's a reason why 40 hours is the maximum. Because there have been studies that have been done that if you work over that, it's negative to the human body.
Well, and it's, I mean, I've worked many a job that was 16, 18 hour days, but that was one of the reasons I left Ford Motor Company was one of the assignments I would be going into with somebody. And this was before everybody had cell phones, but you had pagers and car phones and things. You were on call 24/7 with that gentleman. And I said, I won't be. And he goes, well, you will be working for me. I said, but I won't be working for you. and he's like, yeah, you will. And I'm like, no. You don't get it. I won't.
Mm.
And that was something they couldn't understand. I had parameters. I didn't mind long hours if I was passionate about what I was doing and that kind of enjoying it. But I wasn't going to be on an electronic leash 24/7 just in case somebody had a thought at 2 a.m. that they wanted to share.
And that happens. We have a client that's a Duke Fuqua grad that we work with, and he was telling me some stories. It's like, you can get a text at 2 o'clock in the morning. And 5 minutes later, that person is like, where are you? I mean, why are you not responding? I'm like, no way, guy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you see it out there, but you see everyone viewed as interchangeable, right? And it's a plug-and-play world. Well, there's, you know, 50 more MBAs that can come in, or there's, you know, there's all these people out there. And that's unfortunate because we are all unique. We're all bringing something else to the table. And I'm good at modeling. I was good at creating things. And I met someone from Ford not too long ago, and they're still using some of the models I built in spreadsheets 20-some years ago.
And he
said, your name is familiar. And I said, it was probably at the bottom of my spreadsheets. He goes, yeah, you're right. That's where I was. And it's one of those things. You can have a legacy. But when I was at Ford, they recruited only the best people to come in. But they also recognized they were only going to keep 2% of the people.
Mm.
out in that program. And I was like, I said, okay, fine, if that's the way, but are you keeping the 2% you want? Because I always argued the 2% that stayed were the ones that we were talking about earlier that didn't get developed, that didn't mind doing the same job over and over again. And those of us who, I mean, I'd been with Ford 10 months before I got, you know, when I got with the first recruiter call, I had just changed. I didn't even know my phone number. There was a recruiter calling on, you know, on my business line saying, you know, I've got a position opening here. And I'm like, been with Ford 10 months. I think I'll stay a little bit longer. And I'm like, how did you get this number? I don't even know what my number is. Because that's the way it works there. And, and, you know, realizing the value and that commitment to developing your people makes the difference. It makes a difference whether you can compete.
Yep.
How far people will go, the productivity. And I can remember the company up in Pennsylvania where the employer continued to pay his people even after the fire, right? And they came back then and helped him rebuild his factory because he had been so dedicated to them and so committed to growing them and recognizing that they were each unique individuals and had them passionate about his company and about the job.
Wow.
And where he would have gone out of business, he was back in business and making money again, and he had his team there, and it was all about how he led the people and how committed those people were to him.
Sounds like a liberating leader to me, because a liberating leader actually gives people an opportunity to do what they do well. And I'll just share another story with you really quickly. There's a company out of Ohio, and irrespective, as a manufacturing company, irrespective to what your passion is or what your dream, they put resources behind it so that you can go and achieve that. So during the day, you may be working in a in the manufacturing plant, but if you want to be a nurse, they will actually pay for you to go to nursing school. And I haven't seen any other company do that, but just this one out of Ohio, and the guy wrote a book called Loving Mondays.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, Derek, thank you so much for having been on the show. I want you to give out your website and your Twitter handle so everyone knows how they can reach out to you.
Yeah, everything's branded for us. The Milestone brand is milestonebrand.com. Our Twitter handle is Milestone Brand. And our Facebook handle is the same, Milestone Brand.
And so here, give them the name of your book again.
Yeah, we have several books. The book that I actually wrote, I wrote four books. They're all titled Superhuman Performance 2 and Hardback. Version 1 and 2, then we have two workbooks, Superhuman Performance. But you can go to our publishing company, which is beneath the Milestone brand umbrella, milestonepublishinghouse.com.
Thanks, Derek, for being on the show today. And thanks, listeners, for tuning in. And we'll talk to you next week.